Hi, I'm often asked for a quick thought on the parsha or a point to ponder, and my goal in the shiurim this afternoon is going to be to give you a bunch of ideas to think about that jumped out at me, usually from contemporary or relatively contemporary sources surrounding the parsha. Let's start with an old favorite one. The parsha begins by recognizing that Noach was an ish tzaddik, and Rashi tells us that the primary tools of a tzaddik are his or her masim tovim. Rav Shlomo Volbe, the famous Mashgiach in Eretz Yisrael, once noted that there are many people who perform many, many good deeds. A lot of mitzvos and masim tovim, but those masim tovim that they perform come from chitzonios, or from the outside. They don't represent the person's internal side. The tzaddik is different. What a tzaddik does is actually an outward expression of who he or she is. So therefore, when a tzaddik does a masa tov, he or she is not only performing the specific action that is a masa tov, but rather by giving it from himself or herself, he or she is actually setting forth a chain of events wherein many more positive things happen to the world in the future. Rav Volbe says, this is like a parent. A parent gives birth to a child. That child is raised by the parent. It's true. But the truth of the matter is, when the child is being raised, the parent is not only thinking about this child. The parent who raises this child is actually raising many more future generations in the process. I mean, think about it. How often do we reflect back on things that we learned from our parents and our grandparents, little kneches and minhagim? That's what the word toldos means. That the outgrowth of masim tovim, the toldos, that which is grown, is actually far-reaching. It's the opposite, says Rav Volbe, of Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah, which was a major problem at that period in time, is actually the whole essence of Avodah Zarah was doing things that were meaningless. In Nefesh HaRab, I think Rav Schachter makes a similar point in the name of Rav Soloveitchik, who used to say that Chukos HaGoyim is defined by acts which are useless, or to quote Rav Schachter quoting Rav Soloveitchik, stupid. Things that have no purpose or meaning certainly fall potentially within the realm of Avodah Zarah. And that's our first thought. The second thought I want to focus on is post-Mabul, when the Torah tells us that Noach needed to go out and test and try to figure out had the waters receded. And so the first bird that he selects to utilize in the test was the Orev, or the raven. Now, the Medrash Rabbah comments that Noach had a significant debate with the Orev as to why he was being sent. Noach noted to the Orev that he himself, Noach, didn't understand what other purposes ravens had in the world. For after all, they couldn't be eaten, they can't be used for food. And so how come he shouldn't send the raven? Worst comes to worst, so we don't have ravens in the new world. It was actually Hashem, says the Medrash, who intervened and told Noach to take the raven back in. Because, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the world would eventually need the raven. V'kachava, and that's the way it was in the time of Eliyahu HaNavi, when Eliyahu HaNavi was hiding on the mountain, and he had no food to eat. It was the Orvim, the ravens, who brought him food. Seizing on the Medrash, Rav Ruderman, the late great Rosh Yeshiva in Baltimore, once asked why Hashem didn't use doves, or another kosher bird to feed Eliyahu HaNavi. Why did he use a raven? Rav Ruderman answers that there are actually two different people who serve as HaKadosh Baruch Hu's agents in the world. There are two derachim in Avodas Hashem. On the one hand, there's one group who are known as the fiery group. You know how it is. When that group gets together and sees somebody doing something wrong, they're very fiery, and they go out and they protest, and they're very strong, and they scream and they yell and they're atzbani. There's another group that looks for the opportunity to strengthen a community, yes, but without the fiery response of the first group. Hashem sent the ravens to Eliyahu in order to show him that he was acting in the same way like ravens do, as being a part of the first group with the strong temper. But he wanted Eliyahu to know that even ravens are able to overcome their nature and able to serve and feed him, and he too needed to overcome his nature and care for the Jewish people. And so, Noach sends a raven, and Eliyahu HaNavi is benefited by a raven. Thought number three comes from the pasuk which tells us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Elokim, the Midas Adin, speaks to Moshe Rabbeinu and tells him, Tzei min HaTeva. The question has to be raised, why would Hashem need to command Noach to leave a teva? Noach and his family only went into the teva in order to get out of the danger of the mabul. So why does he need a commandment? Why does he need a tzivui to leave the teva once the crisis was over? And of course, the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh explains that leaving from a teva signifies an end to the prohibition against Tashmish, which was in place while Noach's family was in the middle of the crisis. And thus Hashem was actually telling Noach that the crisis was over and that Noach could and perhaps should resume populating the world through Tashmish, through the mitzvah of Pur Ravum. But Rav Mordechai Gifter, the late great Telza Rosh Yeshiva of Cleveland, points out that there's a different lesson that one can learn from here. After all, when Noach was on the Teva, Noach and his family attended, so to speak, an intensive seminar in the concept of Chesed. After all, taking care and feeding animals was a lesson in Chesed, and it was a lesson that was quite unyielding while the family was on the Teva. Day became night, night became day, as each one of them worked on taking care of the animals. And Noach might have assumed that he needed to stay in the Teva until he was done learning completely the lesson of Chesed, that Noach was, so to speak, not ready to move on. That's why Hashem had to come along and tell him Tzei min HaTeva. Hashem needed to tell Noach, says Rav Gifter, that the time had come for him to move on, that he had completed the lesson of Chinuch, of Chesed, and now he's ready to move on to the next mission of life, of building a world with that Chesed. You know, Rav Gifter adds that Chesed is the antithesis of the Midos that caused the world's destruction at that time. The Torah says, Ketz kol basar balafanai ki mala'ah aretz chamas. Petty theft, the theft, is what caused the destruction of the world. Says Rav Gifter, chamas is a lack of consideration for one's fellow man. And chesed is actually the opposite. It's supreme consideration of one's fellow man. At times, even over one's very self. And thus, Tzei min HaTeva is a lesson in carrying on the chesed that was taught while in the Teva. Issue number 4 that I'd like to bring up concerns the rainbow. Eskashti nasati be'anan, HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises Noach that a symbol of the fact that he was creating this covenant between him and mankind was to be the rainbow. The question has to be asked, of all symbols in the world, why does God choose to use the rainbow as a symbol? Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, once pointed out that we need to understand the depths of the colors of a rainbow. And yet he said at the same time, colors of the rainbow represent but one aspect of a human being and his experience. You see, said Rav Aaron, man, and particularly the soul of man, is like a white light. And how he chooses to refract that light in this world through the prism of the world, and what he chooses to highlight in color as his primary color, helps him identify the stronger areas of his identity and personality. And so to some of us, the red is stronger, and to some of us, the blue is stronger, and to some of us, the green is stronger. But that's a bris between man, the successful man, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when a man chooses to stand within the light of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Thus, the rainbow best represents the relationship between man and God. You know, after the mabul is over, Noach comes out of the teva, and he changes his title. All of a sudden, changes. Whereas on the one hand, Noach is referred to as Ish Tzadik Tamim Haya B'Dorosav. Now, after the mabul, all of a sudden he becomes Vayachal Noach Isho Adama. What happened between Ish Tzadik and Isho Adama? So Rashi comes along and he derides Noach's fall from grace, from being the Ish Tzadik, to becoming the common Ish Adama. A man whose whole life was based solely on the land, on the here, on the now, the one who can plant grapes and become drunk in the process. In other words, says Rashi, it seems to imply from Rashi, Noach was no longer interested in spiritual pursuits. But Rabbi Dr. Benny Lau, in his Sefer Esnachta, argues that perhaps another interpretation is more appropriate. He notes that the term Ish in Nach often refers to a leader. in Sefer Shoftim, in other places. And thus, suggests Rav Lau, after the Mabul, Noach took a more active role in running the world. In fact, he says, Noach remained an Ish Tzaddik even during the time that he was running the world as an Ish Adama. After all, the Psik that notes that when it says, Noach Ish Tzaddik Tamim Haya Bedoro Sav, the implication is that it was more than one dar. The Psikta says, Bebachruso Ubetziruso, when he was young, and also Bezignuso, in his later years. It doesn't matter, he remained a tzaddik. And thus, Rabbi Lau adds that Noach's story is the story of a man who saw a calm world destroyed traumatically, and then was zocha to see 70 nations spring forth from him again. This could only have happened, says Rabbi Lau, because he worked at it, because he not only stayed an ish tzaddik, but was an ish ha'adama as well. Anyway, Noach somehow becomes drunk, vayesh v'nayayin vayishkar, and then Shem and Yefes step up to the plate to cover their father. And the Torah tells us that vayikach Shem vayefes es ha'simla in Parak Tes Pasuk Chaf Gimel, and Rashi tells us that the word vayikach, the singular word is used, is done in order to show us that it was Shem who moved faster because he had a samtsus, a strength, a desire. He was more bent on doing the job. And though it's true that Yefes too did the same action, but he did it without the same gusto, without the same desire and the same energy. And thus, says Rashi, the reward for Shem was the mitzvah of tzitzis, while the reward for Yefes was that his children and would be zocha to kvura, they too would be zocha to burial when the final battle of Gog u'Magog takes place. Yamar Arav Steinman, Shalita, the author of the Ayelas HaShachar, notes that although both Shem and Yefes did the exact same act, the two brothers received very different rewards. Take a look at it. On the one hand, Shem's reward, the mitzvah of tzitzis, is an ongoing reward that keeps on paying. We all get the chance to wear tzitzis. All of us get the opportunity to earn more schar with tzitzis. Yes, we get the benefit of the tznius of a tzitzis as well. But the mitzvah of tzitzis is eternal and ongoing. On the other hand, when Yefes gets his reward, he gets a reward. It's also a question of kavod and tznius, but it's a one-time reward, la'asid lavo, in the future. Rav Steinman observes that we see that a single mitzvah includes all aspects of the mitzvah. And when God chooses to give out the schar for doing the mitzvah, even the aspects about the energy and the efforts that one extends in doing the mitzvah spring forth. And showing more enthusiasm and initiative when we're doing a mitzvah can change the reward that we get for doing that mitzvah in the end. People don't always realize how important not only is mitzvah performance, and the way that one does one mitzvah can affect world destiny, but also the way that one does a mitzvah can also affect the world's future as well through the process of schar and onesh. Finally, the parsha turns around and focuses on some of the future generations. And we, of course, get to the famous story of Migdal Bavel, which in Perek Yud Aleph is introduced with the pasuk, Vayi kol aretz safa achas udvarim achadim, that the land spoke a single safa. And thus the prelude to the Migdal story is somewhat contradictory. For earlier we read that as the nations grew, they spread themselves out, ish lefi mishpachto lishono. It sounds like there were already different families and languages. Yet, when the Migdal Bavel story begins, it sounds like the Torah is suggesting that there was a single universal language. How do we make sense out of that apparent contradiction? And furthermore, isn't the idea of the fact that there was a Safa Achas, which seems to imply a certain degree of Achdus or unity, doesn't that seem to be something desired in life? Why would Hashem come down and punish the people for wanting to stay united? Rav Yaakov Ariel Shalita, the famous Rav of Ramat Gan, points out that there's a fundamental difference between a Safa and a Lashon. While both the Safa and Lashon usually refer to spoken languages, Rav Ariel says that Safa refers to an external language of the people, when you want to explain mundane matters, external issues, you talk about you doing so b'safa achas. But a lashon speaks to the very internal language of the people, its heart and its soul, its style, its culture and its mentality, the things that make one nation unique, what brings nations together. The fact of the matter is, when the nations aligned to build Migdal Bavel, each one had a personal reason to go ahead and do so. V'hava nivna lanu migdal, v'nasa lanu shem. They decided to go ahead and build the tower, and each of them wanted to make a name for itself. When each group decides to make a name for itself, that alone becomes a recipe for disaster. There is no real unity under those circumstances. It reminds me of another thought that Rav Schachter always likes to point out, when he says that the concept of Achdus is a gift that's unique to Am Yisrael. We alone have the ability to relate and unite internally and fully. We alone relate on something more than a superficial level. And that's why perhaps in next week's Parsha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Avram Avinu, V'nivrachu v'cha kol mishpachoso adama. The nations of the world are merely referred to as families, with familial connections. Connections that are based on something. As opposed to Am Yisrael, which can connect on a much deeper level and can therefore create a certain degree of unity. It would be wrong to finish this discussion about the Parsha and thoughts to ponder without a thought on the Haftorah. In the context of the Haftorah, the Navi Yishayahu comments, Ki mei noach zosli. But the phrase, mei noach, seems to imply that Noach had some sort of involvement in the Mabul. Why would the Mabul seem to point to Noach as one refers to the Mabul as Mei Noach? The late great Rav Shimon Schwab pointed out that Noach is somewhat culpable, because after all he had an opportunity to intervene with God on behalf of the people of his times, and Noach chose not to do so. That's why perhaps at the beginning of the Parsha Rashi cites the famous comment, Yesh Dorshin Oso Lignai. Not because if he would have been in Avram Avinu's generation, Avram would have overshadowed him. We don't play guttle card statistics in order to determine who's a superstar and who's not. But rather, even in his own generation, Darshan Oso Lignai, he had an opportunity to provide and be Megan and protect his generation, and Noach was unable to step up to the plate to do so. Yesh Darshim Oso Lignai. And therefore, Kimei Noach Zosli. Okay, I think we have enough thoughts on the Parsha. Hopefully certain things for us to ponder over the course of the week. Have a wonderful Shabbos.